As I officiously led the delegation toward the door, I ordered Carol back to work in my best Simon Legree manner. "Yes, Mr. Bloom," she said meekly. Out on the sidewalk, I overcame my revulsion while I chummily put an arm around the shoulders of the black spokesman and directed his attention to a store directly across the street. "They don't have so many customers here," I explained, "but my good friend Sally Feinstein has many people going in and out, and he has a big window. He will be happy for your poster to be there. You can put it right under where it says Saul's Pawn Shop, and everybody will see it. And be sure to leave him a donation box, 2 donation boxes. He has a big store." They all seemed pleased by my friendly suggestion and started to cross the street. But the white, a sorry-looking specimen with pimples and an imitation afro, hesitated, turned, and said to me, "Maybe we ought to get that girl's name. Some of the things she said to us sounded definitely racist." "Don't waste your time on her," I responded brusquely, dismissing his suspicion with a wave. "She is just a dumb shiksa. She talks that way to everybody. I get rid of her soon." When I re-entered the shop, Bill, who had overheard the episode from the basement stairs, and Carol were convulsed with laughter. "It's not really that funny," I admonished them with an effort at sternness. I had to do something right away, and if my pucker and my phony accent hadn't fooled that crew of subhumans, we'd be in real trouble now. Then I lectured Carol. "We can't afford the luxury of telling these creatures what we think of them. We have a job to do first, and then we'll settle with that bunch once and for all. So let's swallow our pride and play along as long as we have to. Those who don't have our responsibilities can get themselves investigated for racism if they want, and more power to them." But I could not repress a grin when I saw the poster go into place in the pawn shop window across the street, blotting out most of Saul's display of used cameras and binoculars. He must really have had to bite his tongue. And now all the people who see that particular poster will make the correct mental association between the council's thought control program and the people behind it. The last thing to go wrong was Catherine coming down with the flu last night. She was scheduled to take a load of money to Dallas this morning, but she was too sick to go, and it looks like she'll be in bed for another 2 or 3 days. Which means that I'll be stuck not only with a trip to Atlanta tomorrow, but I'll also have to make the Dallas delivery. That'll be a whole day wasted on planes and at airports, and I need the time badly for getting ready for the Evanston operation. We want to hit the new nuclear power complex at Evanston during the next 6 weeks, while they're still guiding tourists through it. After the 1st of June, when it will be closed to the public permanently, knocking it out will become much more difficult. The Evanston Power Project is an enormous thing. 4 huge nuclear reactors surrounded by the biggest turbines and generators in the world. And the whole thing sits on concrete pilings a mile out in Lake Michigan, which supplies the cooling water for the reactor's heat exchangers. The project generates 18,000 megawatts of electric power, almost 20 billion watts. Incredible. The power is fed into the power grid, which supplies the entire Great Lakes region. Before the Evanston project went into operation 2 months ago, the whole Midwest was suffering from a severe power shortage, much worse than we have here, which is bad enough. In some areas, factories were restricted to operating only 2 days a week, and there were so many unexpected blackouts in addition that the region was on the verge of a real economic crisis. If we can take out the new power plant, things will be even worse than they were before. In order to keep the lights on in Chicago and Milwaukee, the authorities will have to steal power from as far away as Detroit and Minneapolis, where there is none to spare. All of that part of the country will be hit hard. And it took 10 years to design and build the Evanston project, so they won't be able to remedy the situation very soon. But the government has thought about the consequences of losing the Evanston project, too, and the security there is pretty formidable. One can't get near the place except by boat or airplane, and there are searchlights, patrol boats, and strings of buoys with nets of cable between them all around it, which makes the approach by water almost out of the question. The shore, for miles in either direction, is fenced off, and there are a number of military radar and anti-aircraft installations behind the fence, making any attempt to crash an airplane loaded with explosives into the plant very unlikely to succeed. It seems to me that about the only way we could mount an attack on the place by conventional means would be to sneak some heavy mortars within range, somewhere near the shore where there is a possibility for concealment. But to my knowledge, we don't have that kind of weaponry available at the moment. Anyway, the really vital parts of the power station are in such massive buildings that I doubt a mortar attack could inflict more than superficial damage. So Revolutionary Command asked me to tour the place and come up with some unconventional ideas, which I have done, but there are still several tough problems to be solved. My visit there last Monday gave me a pretty good idea of the strengths and weaknesses of the security arrangements. Some of the weaknesses are really quite astounding. Most astounding of all is the government's decision to let tourists into the place, even temporarily. The reason for that decision, I am sure, is the big fuss the anti-nuclear crazies have been making about the plant. The government feels obliged to show the public all the safety features which have been built into it. When I signed up for the tour, I deliberately loaded myself down with all sorts of paraphernalia just to see what I could get into the plant. I carried an attaché case, a camera, and an umbrella, and I filled my pockets with coins, keys, and mechanical pencils. On the ferry boat which takes tourists out to the plant, there is very little security. They merely made me open my attaché case for a cursory inspection. But when I got into the guard station at the plant itself, they divested me of my case, camera, and umbrella. Then I had to walk through a metal detector, which picked up all the metal junk in my pockets. I emptied my pockets for the guards, but then they handed the stuff back to me. They didn't look closely at any of it, so one can at least sneak an incendiary pencil in. What really interested me, though, was that one old gentleman in my group was carrying a cane with a metal head, and the guards let him keep it during the tour.